For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, and greetings to the folks who made Atlanta, Georgia, number 28 on our all-time views list by city. After which, we get right back to grousing about electric vehicles. EVs are a huge part of the climate plans of virtually every Western government, and they continue to be a hit with everyone except the public. But since the state knows best, politicians and bureaucrats remain committed to banning the alternatives. One glimmer of hope for consumers here was the availability of cheap Chinese imports, until Canada and the US slapped a 100% tariff on them to protect the auto sector from being bankrupted by all the exciting opportunities the green new economy offers. The United States put off its tariffs until September or later, while ours kick in on October 1st. Now, China's making threatening noises about trade, and normally the right thing to do on protectionism is to ignore such threats, and also bribes, and just pursue unilateral free trade. But here the geopolitics are complex and murky. Now, at the risk of sowing the seeds of harmony, we do want to mention that National Post columnist Kelly McParland recently argued that gas-electric hybrids are a far better choice from virtually every point of view, from affordability to reliability. But if net zero means net zero, then the Canadian government, like Western governments everywhere, is still over an oil barrel. Likewise, a Calgary Herald item declares, quote, Canada has committed tens of billions of dollars to revitalizing its battery sector. History suggests it needs a strategy to make sure that bet pays off, end quote. A plan? You're right, I'll need a plan, to quote Mole from Pogo. So, here's a wacky, thoroughly pro-market plan. Get rid of the rule that people have to buy EVs even if they don't want to, because some politician as ignorant of economics as of climate thinks they'll make the weather better. Hey there, just a quick reminder about subscriptions. We're this close to 100,000, so if you have already subscribed, thank you very much and enjoy the programs. If you haven't, click the button here, get us to 100,000 and beyond. And now, back to me. And speaking of getting rid of things, under the scary heading, quote, 17 European World Heritage Sites named as the most at risk from climate change, end quote, Euronews Green reminds us that a very mild warming will destroy everything nice. It seems that, quote, from prehistoric paintings to Swiss glaciers, these European World Heritage Sites are at risk from flooding and drought, end quote, which we never had before 2000 or 1980 or 1950 or whenever climate change hit. And apparently among the things we could lose are, quote, the Swiss Alps, end quote. No, not the Matterhorn. And you might think that the combined efforts of every government on Earth could not get rid of one single mountain, let alone an entire range. But apparently there's nothing climate change cannot do, including erase the world-obscure, quote, Engelsberg Ironworks, end quote, which are in, quote, Engelsberg, a village in Fagersta municipality in Västmanland County, Sweden, end quote. Also on the hit list is the Sydney Opera House, which we didn't even realize was European, but in fact the story pretty much lays the entire world waste, at least any of the nice bits. And it was irresistible clickbait. PlanetAttractions.com went with 50 World Heritage Sites will be lost by 2050 thanks to climate change, say experts, end quote. The Independent plumped for, quote, the UNESCO World Heritage Sites most at risk from climate change and four are in the UK, end quote. Ethos said, quote, 50 UNESCO World Heritage Sites face profound impacts from climate change, new research finds, end quote, blah, 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 blah. Without a single story linking to the actual study simulation so that we could determine whether, say, it relied on RCP 8.5 or something. However, we checked, and yes, of course it did. Now there's something we wish climate change really would wash away. Instead, it's going to be the islands again, apparently. Earth.com thunders that, quote, the World Meteorological Organization, WMO, recently reported that the sea levels in the vast Pacific Ocean are climbing faster than the global average, raising alarm bells for low-lying island nations, end quote. You do know that all the oceans are connected, right? And that because of gravity, water flows downhill, so that if the Pacific were rising faster than, say, the Atlantic, it would then pour from the former into the latter until they equalized? Or did you just not think about it? Meanwhile, in the New York Times Climate Forward, David Gellies laments that the Tecton Range, visible from his Jackson Lake Lodge hotel room in Moran, Wyoming, had snowier peaks in the 1950s, and, quote, the glaciers are markedly smaller than they were just 70 years ago, end quote. So, are you saying man-made warming began in the 1950s? Or did you just not think about it? And another tiresome piece of alarmist recycling from the Atlantic Weekly Planet says, quote, the corals that survive climate change will be unrecognizable, end quote. They rhapsodize about coral to the point that the email newsletter calls it, quote, a biblical tale of resilience, end quote, before telling us coral is not resilient, despite having been around for 500 million years or so of dramatic climate change, including a problematic cooling over the last 4 million years. Gosh, so is that why the Great Barrier Reef is flourishing as never before, since really detailed monitoring began in 1985? Or did you just not think about it? Ah, and today's question of the week, from Reuters Sustainable Switch, quote, has Antarctica hit a point of no return, end quote? You don't get a prize for guessing that their answer is yes, but we can't show it. Of course, the story says, drumroll please, quote, Antarctica is changing faster than expected, end quote, meaning science doesn't understand the phenomenon, but activists and journalists do. Yeah, except the story blurts out that this sort of warming has happened repeatedly over the last 20 millennia. So, it's natural, unless someone time-traveled with a mess of SUVs and we weren't told, and it wasn't disastrous. And now consider a Daily Mail report from a quite different region that, quote, a patch of the central equatorial Atlantic began cooling at record rates in June. Scientists can't identify a good reason to explain this sudden temperature shift, end quote. Yeah, because the fact is, climate is complex, unstable, and poorly understood, even if it's almost always presented in the press as a crystal-clear, baffling harbinger of doom. Another odd thing about the climate debate is the way that alarmists often manage to observe things happening that you and I can't see at all. For instance, National Geographic insisting that people are fleeing Puerto Rico for Buffalo, New York because the weather's so much better, and saying, quote, the question of climate havens, places where extreme weather events are rare and which tended to be located in the northern regions of the U.S. close to bodies of fresh water, has gained currency in recent years as deadly wildfires, record heat, and damaging hurricanes increasingly affect day-to-day life in the southern and western parts of the country, end quote. Meanwhile, in the America we can actually see, people are moving south, and places like Florida and Texas are among the most rapid gainers of population, despite this heat and hurricane risk. And, we've got to say, if you believe that the climate haven question has gained currency in recent years, you've been talking to the wrong taxi drivers, or living in the wrong echo chamber. And another case in point here is the New York Times emailing, quote, what will we do with all this power, end quote, to tease a David Wallace Wells column insisting that, quote, I simply cannot believe where we are with solar, says Jenny Chase, the Bloomberg NEF analyst. By just 2030, Chase estimates, solar power will be absolutely and reliably free during the sunny parts of the day for much of the year, pretty much everywhere, end quote. Meanwhile, Canary Media warns that in California, yes, sunny California, quote, advocates say a last-minute push to rein in utility bills would crush useful clean energy programs and not help the state's energy affordability crisis, end quote. So, which is it? Is solar free, or is it causing energy bills to soar? Because you really can't have it both ways. In this week's newsletter, we continue our cheerful chart series with one on literacy. You see, the key to being a climate doomster is to take for granted every aspect of human progress over the past 300 years and then tell yourself that it would have happened anyway even without fossil fuels before focusing on imagined horrors that might happen in the future if the overheated model projections all come true and no one bothers to apply the same ingenuity and effort that produced all these past advances in order to adapt to whatever changes do come along. But for those of us not capable of such mental gymnastics, a more cheerful way to pass the time is to look at what has improved over time and be grateful for it, including, for those of us who still enjoy reading books, those for the younger generation should explain are those rectangular things full of paper with words on them. The astonishing rise of literacy is one of the things that gives us much cheer. So, behold this week's cheerful chart showing literacy rates since 1475. Prior to 1900, in many places around the world, fewer than half the population could read and write. Now, developed countries have achieved effectively 100% literacy, and developing countries are catching up quickly, thanks to fossil fuels, not a surge of windmills. In the newsletter, we also return to the tired climate alarmist trope that the science, while settled, is also far worse than we thought, because we found a case where it is. We've had lots to say about temperature reconstructions that magically make warm intervals in the past disappear, and for a quick recap, be sure to see our video on temperature proxies, which exposes some of the shadiest ways in which tree ring proxies have been cherry-picked to give predetermined answers. And now, a new peer-reviewed study by a group of Chinese scientists exposes a remarkable fact about the making of such hockey sticks. You see, scientists can choose from among many different proxies, including tree rings, but also ice cores, lake bed sediments, and spelotherm, that's cave mineral deposit layers. But not all of them capture slow, long-term natural trends. And in fact, curiously, tree rings are especially likely only to pick up year-to-year or decade-long variations, while entirely missing the century-scale trends recorded by the other types of proxies that are of particular interest here. For instance, using the so-called Pages 2K archive, that's the set of temperature proxies now relied on by the IPCC for its long-term reconstructions, the authors show the following chart. The green line is the global temperature reconstruction from AD 0 to 2000 using only tree rings. The red line is the reconstruction using the non-tree ring records. And clearly, the non-tree ring records pick up warm periods in the past, especially during the Roman and medieval times, and the cold interval of the Little Ice Age. Also, the 20th century is nothing special by comparison, and its warming trend is nothing compared to that in the period from 0 to 250 AD. The tree rings, by comparison, miss all that detail. So, guess which proxy the IPCC likes best? Okay, we concede in the newsletter, fall really is coming. So, from the CO2science.org archive, we note that as local tomatoes with actual flavor become briefly available in Canada, where most of the year it's trucked in orange styrofoam-like spheres, we are pleased to report that Lycopersicon esculentum P. mill, otherwise known as garden tomatoes, respond extremely well to the extra CO2 that's added to the air by the trucks their inferior rivals drove in on. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I am enjoying watching my tomatoes ripen.
That's right.